Hello everyone, welcome to our special Future Melbourne Committee meeting. It is our meeting number 14 on Tuesday the 29th of June 2021. Thank you to everyone for attending. We're opening at 2:45 p.m. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which the City of Melbourne is gathered, the Bunurong Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We remain committed to our reconciliation journey and believe that at its heart, everything we can do to strengthen relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples will drive benefits for our city, our community and our state. As part of our efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, physical attendance by members of the public at council and committee meetings will be limited until further notice. During the period 1 May 2020 to 26 April 2022, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to physically attend meetings. By live streaming services, we're able to comply with the attendance test prescribed under the Act. But we're absolutely delighted that we've been able to welcome real people into our meeting this afternoon, so thank you. We do have people attending via our live streaming service. Welcome to you as well. And the audio and video recording of this meeting will be made available by close of business on our website tomorrow. And the unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be also available on our website as soon as practicable. Can I please ask everyone just to check their mobile phones and ensure that they are off for the duration of the meeting or silent? I'm doing the same thing. Now, the purpose of today's special meeting is to hear submitters who have requested to be heard in support of their written feedback to the draft council plan and the draft budget. The draft council plan is for 2021 through to 2025, and the budget is for the 22 financial year. The agenda this afternoon comprises two reports from management, and I'm pleased to say that no apologies have been received. Good timing, councillors, and we are all present and accounted for, so thank you very much. It's important just to note any conflicts of interest. Councillors, if you have either a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020, please disclose the nature and type of your interest prior to consideration of that item. Now, we're into reports from management, item 3 on our agenda, and it's this time that I note the submissions that have been received for the agenda this evening in accordance with our council's governance rules, so I will work through those now. In relation to agenda item 3.1, which is consideration of public feedback and matters arising for the proposed 2021 to 2025 council plan, we've had requests to speak from Linda, Emily, Vanessa, Nicola, Judy Love, Daniel, Thanuj Kumar, Michelle, Chris Jubb, David Hamilton, Richard Hunt, Mark Boyle and Luke Stowe. The total number of submissions to the draft council plan were 42 people in total with written submissions. And we will call on those people to speak when we come to that agenda item. Is there anyone here who wanted to speak to that item and I haven't noted their name?
I may be Michelle, but I'm Michael. I'm not sure. I got a note to be here.
Really, Michael? Speaking to the council plan?
Yes.
Well, let's make a note of that. And if we don't hear from Michelle, who could very well be here or online, but regardless, we'll make some time.
Canadian, so maybe.
Make some time for you. Now, there is somebody I can't see behind the pillar there.
Yes, I'm Zoe Edwards. I was also listed to attend today.
Zoe? And that's on the budget item or the council? Budget, good. I'm coming to that now. So that's good, Zoe. I'm going to look out for you. And I wonder whether we can get a better seat for you so that we can see you. Might be better if you're able, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
Thank you so much. Fabulous. So thank you. That's on the council plan, and Michael noted. In relation to agenda item 3.2, consideration of public feedback and matters arising on draft budget 2021-22 and the revenue rating plan, we've had requests to speak from Patrick Donovan, Zoe Edwards, Mary Lou Howie, Chris Jubb, Michael Petit. That's you? Excellent. Did you want to speak to the council plan as well, Michael, or just the budget?
My mistake, just the budget.
Just the budget, good one. Thank you. David Hamilton, Artemis Petitchi, Tony Penner and Sue Dite. Is there anybody here or through live streaming that wanted to speak to the budget and I did not mention their name? No? And I'm sure the council team will let me know if anybody's texting. All good. The total number of submissions for the draft budget and revenue and rating plan was 34 people providing feedback. Thank you very much. And one person, 34 on the budget and one person on the revenue and rating plan. Now, particularly for those who have not presented before, what we do is as the item comes up, we will ask you one by one to make your presentation. You have 3 minutes to address the committee to assist. We have a countdown clock here. We also have a countdown timer that appears on the screen for everybody who is live streaming. You will hear a bell at the end of 2 minutes to let you know that you have 1 minute left. You then hear another bell at the end of 3 minutes. And if you could please finalise your presentation at that time, it would be appreciated. We are really looking forward to hearing from everybody today, and the fairest thing we can do is for everybody to stick to the timeframes. That would be fantastic. Now, we're going to get into it, and just to let everybody know, we are allowing also time for councillors to ask questions to our submitters on particular issues. Many of our verbal presentations this afternoon reflect written submissions as well, and we have all read those. We may have questions. We're also going to ask management and members of our executive team, and our CEO Justin Hannay has organised that to be able to respond to submissions where relevant and where management may be making recommendations for changes to the council plan and budget. And in that way, we get to understand what council will be considering this evening. So if you bear with us while we go through that flow as we get into the items this afternoon. Now, we are going to move to agenda item 3.1. It's consideration of public feedback and matters arising for the proposed 2021 to 2025 council plan. And I'm calling on our first speaker, Linda, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in support of their feedback. Linda, do we have you here or via live streaming?
I'm live streaming.
Excellent, Linda. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sally. Thank you for having me and thank you to all the members. I'm a passionate Docklander and I just want to raise my personal and local stress the importance of my needing to have Docklands as a focus in future Melbourne decisions. Docklands, I believe, is the gateway to the whole of the City of Melbourne and can be used in a far more beneficial way to enhance the city and to flow on to better things for all of us as residents, as well as business owners, of which I am both living and working in the City of Melbourne. We have an unfortunate epidemic that is causing great grief to so many people, but I know that planning for the future is still so important to everything that we need to do as Melburnians and to showcase Melbourne to the rest of Australia, which I think will become more and more important as this pandemic is brought under control and we are able to showcase ourselves as one of the greatest cities in our country. I fear that money is spent in many other areas without a focus on Docklands, and my passion is to make sure that Docklands is considered and is given the opportunity to grow. And I also want to thank you for the chance to speak. Thank you.
Excellent, Linda. Thank you. And thank you for the feedback. I think in this case, I can express on behalf of all councillors and staff that we all really appreciate how important Docklands is as one of our neighbourhoods. And you'll see across council plan and budget a number of initiatives with a specific focus on Docklands, as well as many of our broader initiatives that will help the neighbourhood. You've got two Docklands residents as councillors, just checking to see if anyone's moved. And we're certainly all champions for that area. To give you a flavour, everything from events and the Firelight Festival coming there has been extended to 5 days instead of three. You'll see that later in July through to the precinct programs and the working closely with the Chamber with a particular focus on retail and the impact COVID's had on retail through some of our precinct activation initiatives through to really big strategic projects like Central Pier and its future. So, Linda, thank you very much for presenting. Councillors, were there any questions for Linda? No? Any other comments? No? Thanks again, Linda, for participating and championing the Docklands neighbourhood. We are moving on to Emily, who is also going to present to us via Zoom. Emily, over to you.
Hi, my name is Emily Unity and my pronouns are she, her. I'm a young person living by myself in the city of Melbourne. I currently work as a mental health peer worker and lived experience advocate. Thank you for your time today. I'd like to focus on three sections of the council plan. First, I'd like to talk about access and affordability. I love the focus on addressing housing and food security for everyone. However, what I thought it was lacking was a focus on health and financial security. It's surprising to see that these weren't a focus considering the recent impacts of the pandemic. There are huge issues that currently exist regarding the inclusivity and accessibility of health services, particularly for marginalised minority groups. As a culturally and linguistically diverse and queer young person, I've had many experiences with health services that just weren't equipped to understand or help me. And my experiences are so far from unique. There are so many layers to this, particularly the concept of the missing middle in mental health services. But for time's sake, I won't dig into this, and I highly encourage you to pursue this further. The second section I'd like to focus on is safety and well-being. There were fantastic points in this section around family and domestic violence and racism and discrimination. But again, I feel like there were some areas that have been missed. Whilst the progress indicators include things like a decrease in rates of recorded family violence and complaints of discrimination, I think there needs to be more focus on the accessibility and support coming from these complaints. Only a tiny percentage of incidents get reported, not only because of the lack of support around reporting, but also lack of knowledge that these systems even exist. We need to be empowered and educated on our rights, on how to report these events. We need proper supports in place to guide us through these methods. I don't think necessarily a decrease in reports is a good indicator that we're addressing these issues. Instead, I think better indicators would include items such as the number of intervention orders actioned, free counselling sessions given, and how connected the support mechanism is with other services such as health, financial, and housing support. The third point I'd like to make is about how this plan came to be and what will happen from here. I like the focus on collaboration and working closely with many stakeholders. I also appreciate the mention of community participation. However, I think this needs to be strengthened. There needs to be more opportunities for engagement for our voices to be heard, not just asking for once-off consultations, but instead embedding lived experience at every stage of every initiative, co-designing, co-delivering, and co-producing. You also can't expect to just open your doors and people will come and have their say. I'm privileged enough to have the opportunity, the language, and the ability to have my voice heard here today, but I've only learned this through many hard experiences. You can't expect us to come to you, you have to go to where we are, in our communities, and create opportunities that are actually accessible for us. In conclusion, I believe that the City of Melbourne must grow to be more inclusive, accessible, and relevant for an increasingly diverse population, and it is opportunities like this that can help to change that narrative. The things that I've spoken about involve changes that are not going to be easy, however, I believe that meaningful and genuine things rarely are. I speak for myself and on behalf of my peers when I say that we will continue to do everything in our power to ensure that nothing is done for us without us. And I trust that you, our representatives and our leaders, will also recognise the value of our voices. And I want to deeply thank you for your investment in the future of all people in the City of Melbourne, regardless of our background, ability or identity. Thank you.
Excellent. Emily, thanks so much for your presentation. A lot of very important points raised there. I wondered, Alison, if I've got a question from Olivia first. Emily, I hope you don't mind a question, and it's from Councillor Ball.
Of course.
Thanks, Emily. Can you elaborate on your suggestion of a number of counselling sessions as an indicator, I presume in the context of counselling for family or domestic violence? If we had increased number of counselling sessions, we're increasing our service provision, but what does that indicate in terms of tackling violence? Can you lay that out?
Sure. If you're comfortable, I'd like to share some of my lived experience in this matter. So from talking to sexual assault hotlines and family domestic violence hotlines, it's quite hard to get the support that you need, and often it's very different to a mental health care plan. You're not talking to the same person every time that you see them. And there's a serious lack of support, formal supports around this. I feel like mental health care plans are limited to like 10 sessions. And with sexual assault hotlines, you get a different person each time that you talk to them. I think it would be amazing if, say, you called a hotline and you get given a consistent person that can actually walk you through your journey, sort of like a case manager would. And it can actually assist you with things like intervention orders rather than expecting the victims to constantly manage their own caseload. I think it's unfair to, expect people to go through such a hard time and then navigate the systems themselves.
I think deserving of more conversation as the council plan unfolds. Alison Layton, as our Deputy CEO, did you want to comment on some of Emily's points?
Yes, thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Emily, for your submission. It's important to note that Council do prioritise mental health quite strongly and did so in the draft Council plan, but having received feedback from the community around these issues, management are proposing to increase the content within the Council plan around health and wellbeing. So what we've done there is we've made some stronger references to our health and wellbeing action plan. And Emily, I think a lot of what you're referring to there in terms of the indicators and assessing the success of our interventions will be included within that health and wellbeing action plan. We also have a major initiative within our council plan which focuses specifically on delivering programs in communities that aim to reduce family violence and also address inclusion and diversity issues. I think in terms of the issues around collaboration and really your expression around desiring for council to come to you, that's certainly something that is the objective of council and, again, included within our draft council plan council are considering this evening, whereby we're looking at developing neighbourhood models so we can very much understand the needs of individual neighbourhoods. And, in fact, we'll be taking our FMC meetings once per month out to neighbourhoods, out to communities to make it easier for you to engage with council. So they're just a couple of the things that are included within the council plan. We've definitely picked up on the issues around wanting to increase content in terms of health and wellbeing and council's objectives. And so the management recommendation to council this evening looks at increasing that content. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Alison. And thanks, Emily, for your input. Much appreciated. We're now moving to Vanessa, who is also joining us via Zoom to speak to us this afternoon. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. It's Beck here from Council Business. I've just misplaced Vanessa in my list. Please stand by.
Thanks, Beck. Well, let us know. We could go to Nicola and come back to Vanessa.
Yes, I think actually Vanessa might have dropped out of the Zoom meeting. So let's go on to Nicola and I will let you know if Vanessa returns.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Nicola.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think mainly there is a lack of vision as to how First Peoples and women's knowledge will be used to enrich the city's growth and development for a truly inclusive society. I feel that the plan for a city with Aboriginal focus it's only a 3-page report, and it struck me as being extremely superficial. I was actually quite embarrassed when I read it. I think the plan needs in-depth research to be meaningful and must be significantly increased in length in terms of how this would actually be achieved, and also the KPIs. You know, I think the main KPI is to ensure that more people feel that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island considerations have been considered. I just don't think that goes far enough. The Boon Wurrung and Woiwurrung people haven't even been mentioned, and the caring for country responsibilities, which have been greatly increased as of recently, and the traditional custodians of the land. And I think apart from, I know First Peoples and women are more represented in council as of recently, but I still think there is an enormous pool of knowledge in women in the community, but also in First Nations people in the community. And I think that it would be, it's really necessary to increase this report to not only integrate this into all the other strategic plans to make sure everything is fully integrated, but also, you know, it mustn't just be an add-on or a kind of a an afterthought, which is the way it reads at the moment. For example, I've given the example for the landscape plan or the open space strategy, something like the IEC plus N, which is the Indigenous ecosystems and nodes, that body of research which has been done by Kona and others, needs to be fully integrated into that plan. I also think the municipal public health and wellbeing plan, residence amenity, needs to be taken much more seriously and given greater focus in the wellbeing plan. Access to natural ventilation, solar access, private open space without overlooking distant views, sufficient distance between buildings, urban agriculture and rooftop gardens should be basic requirements in developments. Legislation should disallow negative and excessive shading as well as unreasonable noise. Yes, we need to reactivate the city and encourage development, but the decisions today will create an unlivable city if we're not careful. In-depth consultation with those affected by developments should be mandated to avoid an inhumane living environment and mental health issues. Rather than zero waste, I think we should be aiming for net positive waste, like the Living Future Living Building Challenge. If that can be done in Burwood Brickworks in a suburban shopping centre, surely this can be done in the city of Melbourne to have leadership. Thank you.
Nicola, thank you. Thank you for finishing at the bell and for your very comprehensive, not just comments, but your written submission as well, covered many topics relevant to our council plan. So thank you. Councillors, did anyone have a question? I was going to go to Alison just to give some feedback on some of the points you've raised. Nicola, thank you.
Thank you for your submission, Nicola, and you do raise some excellent points, and it is challenging to distill so much of Council's activity into a high-level strategic plan in what we're presenting here in the Council plan. So one thing that I'm very keen to share with you is our Reconciliation Action Plan, which is something that Council have developed over the last 12 or so months in partnership with our Aboriginal Melbourne branch. Now, our Aboriginal Melbourne branch have been in place in the organisation for coming on just over 2 years, and the overall objective of our Aboriginal Melbourne branch is to embed consideration of Aboriginal practices in terms of all of the things that the City of Melbourne does. So whether that be in our open space planning, in the designs that we prepare for our capital works programs, in the curation of art across the city, the Aboriginal Melbourne branch is intended to assist and support the organisation to really embed our practices with respect to acknowledging the contribution that our First Peoples can make in all that we do. So Nicola, we have your details, and I'm very happy to share our Reconciliation Action Plan with you and to discuss that further with you if that would be of interest. With respect to some of the other matters that you've raised, absolutely, the criticality of responding to climate change and delivering on Council's objectives in relation to the climate and biodiversity emergency that Council declared in 2019 is paramount and also a centrepiece of our Council plan. The waste strategy, we are right in the stage of implementation of our waste strategy, and we're looking at the opportunities that the circular economy can provide. So being able to think about not just net zero waste but net positive is is a fabulous contribution and one in which we will take on board. So at that stage, Lord Mayor, I might conclude my comments, but again offer to take some of these issues up with Nicola following the meeting.
Good. And Nicola, our chairs of relevant portfolios have all been listening to you and, again, have read your submissions, so something for us to look at how we put things into action. Yep, terrific. Thank you. I'm just going to check back to see if we have Vanessa back online.
Lord Mayor, we do not. I have sent a message separately. Perhaps if we check in again before we move on to the next agenda item.
Good. I'll do that at the end. Thank you. Now, we're calling on Judy Love, who is with us today. Judy, thank you very much for attending, and over to you for your presentation. Thank you. Take your time, not at all. We get the joy of the protocol with masks? Your dog.
Sorry,
as well.
What is the protocol with masks? Can I unmask to speak?
Yes, please go ahead. Yes, you can take the mask off.
Thank you. Hello, sorry about that. Thank you for allowing me to speak. As you can probably tell, I am not from Melbourne, but this is my temporary home, and I'm hoping to make it permanent. I was just wondering if you would please consider accessibility. I'm sure it's probably in your draft somewhere, but I'm on the autistic spectrum, and I found it very difficult to find and actually get to your proposals. My experience about disability is different to anybody else's with a similar disability, so it is very much a movable feast. I think that there are hazards in the street that nobody really realises about. It's not that they're deliberately put there, it's just that because somebody has designed it that is not disabled, they then actually design it in by mistake. So, for instance, curb drop-downs at crossings should be usually at a 90-degree angle. If you buy a new, or if you have a new mobility scooter, one of the things in the manual will say, please approach it at 90 degrees for safety. If you have a back problem and you're all over the place on a diagonal one, you increase the back problem. And it's just small things like this that are not always thought through. The other one is there are nibs. I don't know quite how you manage it, but there are nibs on the drop down where the road and the pavement meet each other. And that also, you crash down on that, that's damaging to the mobility scooter. So please, could something be done about those? Poor pavement design, and there's a lot of obstructions, like posts on which the push buttons to cross the road. So it's just thinking these through. Sometimes you've got two crossings absolutely on a corner. So you've got people crossing one way, people crossing the other, and then someone with a mobility scooter, and it's chaos. There are specific examples. So in Lansdowne Road, where Fitzroy Gardens comes out, and the crossing there, it's a very steep incline down. There's a nib. It's very uneven, and it's just a nightmare. So it's small things. Do you have an access officer that actually is familiar with all this? That would be wonderful, because it would just enhance the city and the ability of disabled people to get around. There are two things I'd like to say. I love the red and green lights at the crossing on Swanston Street. They're brilliant. And also...
Thank you. You did really well to finish there, and you made some great points, of course, Judy. And again, we've read your submission, so thank you for participating. I've got our Deputy CEO and I think also Linda, who can respond to some of those comments. But firstly, were there any questions from councillors for Judy? No. So over to you, Alison.
Yes, thank you for your submission, Judy. And I am going to hand over to Linda, who's going to take us through in a bit more detail our responses around disability. But just to reassure you that we do have within our council plan under the safety and wellbeing objective a number of major initiatives that are specifically addressing improving the situation across the city with respect to disability and access and inclusion. But we also have a couple of things that we do right now, and I think Linda's going to talk to those.
Hi Judy, my name's Linda, and Council has recently signed off on our Disability Access and Inclusion Plan. We too are well aware as officers of some of the design around the streets of the city that we do need to attend to, and those actions are within the plan. And we're working with our urban designers and engineers to improve it within the Capital Works program over the next few years. As you would probably understand, these things do take time. We won't be able to do them all in this coming year, but we are aware, and thank you very much for your contribution. And if you have any other ideas, most happy to talk with you directly after the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, and I think you've given us some good specific examples as well that we can look to addressing, which is very helpful. Councillor Ball.
Thank you. You mentioned difficulty engaging with this process with our documents. Are you able to say what would make that easier? And I wonder if we can specify how, when you mentioned, do we have a accessibility officer, how is the best way to get in touch with us during the normal term of council? If Linda could perhaps. There's two questions. Judy, would you like to say how we can improve on how you can engage with us?
Hello, thank you for the opportunity. I think it was really, it was just so many processes to go through before I could actually get to the document, and then having got to the document, it was just finding my way around it. And I think that there may be nothing else that you can do. I don't know. I haven't yet discovered your systems and how you work. In London, I used to work for an inner borough council in the planning department. I'm not a planner. So it's just a question of how to read your documents and how to navigate my way around it, I think, more than something that you could or couldn't do to improve it.
Good. Good. And I think just whether there's a direct person or perhaps, Linda, if we can follow up afterwards with the most direct way, yeah, to interact with our team, I think that'd be really useful. So we'll do that, Judy, with you. Thank you so much.
Excuse me, Lord Mayor, it's Beck here. Unless Daniel's in the room with you, he has not joined the Zoom meeting.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Beck. That's good to know. Thank you. Thanush Kumar is our next speaker, and I believe that he's here. There you are. Welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity for this meeting. I have 3 points which I wanted to make to the council. One is the water waste management. So I am a resident of Docklands. I see a lot of waste inside at the backwaters. So I occasionally go for runs there and I get I feel very bad because the waste is not cleared. So what is the council planning to do for the waste management across the Yarra River? Because we treat Yarra as the sacred river. Second thing is about the homelessness. When I walk across Swanson Street, I see a lot of homeless people. So what is council doing for eradicating the homelessness? Because this is the main strip, and we don't want Melbourne to be projected as a homeless city. And the last thing is, what is the council doing for the improvement of public parks and the sports ground across Docklands? We have one major sports ground in Docklands, and which is near the end of the Docklands, and most of the people doesn't get to use that facility. So if something can be done to improve the facilities to reach the parks, that would be great. So those are the three things which I wanted to put across. And the last thing is, what is the council plan to welcome new residents to Docklands? Because we see only high rise and only immigrants. So how does the council plan to manage the new arrivals into Docklands? So these are the 4 points. Thanks very much for the opportunity. Yep.
Good. Wow. A breadth of issues there. Thank you so much. I'm going to see if Alison wants to respond to a few of those. Over to you, our Deputy CEO.
I can, and thank you so much for your submission. We really appreciate that. So the issues that I took down there were waste, homelessness, public parks and upgrades, particularly within the Docklands area, and also new arrivals in the Docklands area and how we can support them. So I might start with waste. So in regards to waste, under the strategic objective climate and biodiversity emergency within the council plan, the draft council plan, we have a major initiative there to eliminate waste through circular economies. And the City of Melbourne has also committed through its waste and resource recovery strategy to reduce litter and waste in the public realm, including in our waterways. So we recognise that there's a very strong role for us to play, and that includes in terms of keeping our streets clean as well. So another initiative within our draft council plan is to increase our activities in regards to city cleanliness, so collect more waste more often to ensure that our city is presented as best as it possibly can be. And that will be what we're proposing is actually, I guess, the highest level of cleaning service in the city's history in terms of what is being proposed in our draft council plan and draft council budget. With respect to public parks and upgrades, in this draft council plan and also in our budget, there's a significant investment proposed in acquiring more open space for our city residents and also the installation of pocket parks. So that's something that we'll be working through in partnership with the community to determine how that can best be done. But council do recognise that there is a need to increase open space, and that's something that they've been strong on prioritising in the council plan. I think the other thing broadly is around recreation facilities at Victoria Harbour and also at the lower end of the Yarra River. So we're looking at, particularly in the Docklands area, what can be done there. With respect to homelessness and new arrivals, I might see if my colleague Linda Weatherson can address the homelessness issue, and we might have to take the new arrivals issue on notice, unless I might also invite our CEO, Justin Henney, to comment on that. But we'll go with homelessness.
Thanks, Alison. Just in relation to homelessness, we work with both the state government and agencies. We have, council has a policy about finding ways out of homelessness for people sleeping rough, recognising that for some people this does take a long time, and we give them every support we can in terms of medical health, medical help, and housing assistance while we work with them on a daily basis to find them and prepare them to live under a roof. Mm. There are fewer people than there were before the pandemic, and we want to keep it that way, but we understand that the pandemic does have its own, has brought with it its issues around homelessness, and we're trying to minimise that for everyone, including the people who need to work, who do work and live in the city. So all of us working together can hopefully help those sleeping rough.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. And just finally, with respect to new arrivals, one of the most significant cohorts in terms of new arrivals are often our international students, and Council is very active and has been very active over the last 12 months or so since the pandemic in supporting international students. So there's lots of examples of Council offering grants programs and other initiatives to ensure that we look after our international students and support them in coming to Melbourne to live. That's probably all I'll say right now, but I'm very happy to speak to you after the meeting and put you in touch with some other people within the team that can give you a bit more information about that.
No, thanks a lot for that. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. And we will be doing a promotion about how great it is to live in the city and encourage more people to come, particularly after getting a stamp duty exemption for eligible properties in the city from the state government. It's a great way to incentivise people to come in. Thank you so much. Now, we are seeing if Michelle is joining us via Zoom for her presentation. Michelle.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Sally, and thank you, councillors. So my name is Michelle Redfern, and I'm a resident, ratepayer and business owner in the City of Melbourne, specifically in the CBD. Today, I'm also representing the Owners Corporation, comprised of 9 townhouses in Little Lonsdale Street, so my neighbours and I. Of these 9 townhouses, 3, including mine, have or have had businesses operating from the premises. My feedback is specifically in relation to the current and long-term livability and usability of the CBD for residents, ratepayers and businesses. Right now, the livability and usability of the CBD is being severely impacted by the significant number of long-term construction projects underway. I'd like to note that this feedback doesn't relate to the sites related to the Metro Tunnel upgrades. My neighbours and I, along with 3 other groups of residents in our section of Little Lonsdale Street, which is between Spencer and King, are currently enduring 3 construction work sites in our immediate neighbourhood. Our OC has recently commissioned, at our own cost, an acoustic report which provides evidence that the construction noise from the site adjacent to our building is in excess of council guidelines and, in fact, exceeds council's own guidelines during almost all of construction hours. We are having significant issues dealing with council departments, including health services and site services, who are now refusing to deal with our OC. We will not be the only group of residents and business owners having these issues. The impact of the construction site noise and disruption to the residents, business owners, our visitors, our families and our customers is that we are unable to rent or sell our properties. We are unable to operate our businesses without taking extreme measures. And in one case, a mental health issue, a significant mental health issue has arisen that's required a doctor's intervention. Those of us living and working here are subjected to awful conditions day in and day out, both financial and psychologically. We're not naive enough to think that construction won't be part of Melbourne on an ongoing basis. However, the strategic plan does not appear to have a current or future focus on better managing the experience for those of us who live, work and play in the CBD. My 2 asks for right now and into the future: how will City of Melbourne take action to manage construction sites more adeptly and sympathetically to residents and ratepayers? How will City of Melbourne ensure that the planning for the City of Melbourne takes the livability, walkability and aesthetic of our beautiful city into account?
You'll take it. Thank you, Michelle. Excellent points, and something we're very conscious of in that balance between development and residents, and I think that have been heightened, particularly during this time of COVID, for understandable reasons. I'm going to ask our CEO to comment.
Thanks, Michelle. Look, and the issue you raised is a significant issue. The Melbourne's growth pre-COVID, its population growth, it was the fastest growing city in Australia and one of the fastest growing cities in the world. And as a result, we saw an absolute explosion of development, both office development, where we had a less than 3% vacancy rate, and apartment development in the CBD. Now, clearly, post-COVID, as we come out of COVID, we're seeing a slowdown by way of the build economy. The points you've raised in terms of how do we ensure that Melbourne is a great place for residents to be able to live to be able to move throughout the city, and the management of the interface between people living in the city and between construction is critically important. You'll see within our council plan we're establishing a new group, a new branch within the organisation called Homes Melbourne. It will have a few focus areas. One of the focus areas with it will be our housing strategy identifies that there's a shortage of accommodation for key workers, people who work in the city, and some of those in lesser paid roles. And it's critically important that we provide accommodation for people wanting to live in the city who work in the city. In addition, it's going to also look at livability and the issue of amenity and the interface with building sites. We have some live, and ironically, it's a topic that the Mayor and I met with and discussed yesterday by way of how do building sites interface with residents? And whilst building is a disruption, how do we make that as best possible in terms of large gantries or noise, etc. You raised one point which I would like to hear, because it's not acceptable that that we've got staff saying they're not prepared to deal with your OC. So I will take that up with you in terms of your submission contact details directly, so that we can continue to deal with you and work with you going forward. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. And I think at the centre of all of that are comms as well, and how proactive we are in communicating. So thanks for your points, well made and received. I'm going to ask Chris Jubb, Chris, you are here at Town Hall. Welcome. Over to you for your presentation. Thank you, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris. I live in South Bank. I've lived there for 5 years, and I'd like to talk to you about two things today: the City Road Master Plan and sustainability. Firstly, though, I'd like to say how great it is that we're going to get some new public open space with the money that's in there for the Green Reserve. We really need that. I will request though, that it becomes good quality open space. Which by that I mean large and protected from traffic, so that we have somewhere where we're able to connect with nature and escape from the busyness of the area that we live in once in a while. On the City Road Master Plan, it's great that the recreational facilities on the Kingsway Undercroft are getting done. But that's something else that we really need. But it's very disappointing that the wider master plan is not being funded. The draft council plan only includes to advocate the state for the full delivery, but what if they say no? By not funding this, you're letting South Bank residents down. Most South Bankers live on or near City Road, so there is a massive benefit. It will have a safety improvement. You'll be aware of the recent accident along there. Economic benefits by making it a street to do business on, and health and well-being benefits just from making it a street to be proud of, instead of the major highway running past our doors that it is today. Whilst this project is omitted, others are not. So I'm wondering who and how, who decides and how is it decided the priority of projects? City Road Master Plan gives massive benefits that other projects perhaps don't. South Bank Promenade, Dodge Street, the Green Line, South Bank Boulevard, I don't think they provide as big a benefit as the City Road Master Plan does. How is City Road Master Plan missed out? So I would strongly suggest that you reconsider and include this project as a priority. Otherwise, you risk turning our 6-year wait into a 10-year wait. On sustainability, I feel we're not doing enough. It's great that the climate and biodiversity emergency is acknowledged and made one of the 6 main priorities. But in order for the stated aim achieved, for the City of Melbourne to be a leading city globally that sets the standard in climate action, you'll need to do a lot more. To achieve this, sustainability cannot be one of the many, one of the 6 priorities or something that is kept as an individual target. It needs to be something that permeates everything that the council does. The environment needs to be something that is considered in every decision that is made. I'm not sure that is happening right now. In looking through a draft council budget, there are many question marks I have. Are the capital works using low CO2 concrete? Do we need to spend so much on Christmas decorations? are the council cars going to be fully electric? Do all the targets go far enough? And hundreds of more. Time is ticking by. If we don't put the environment at the forefront of our choices, we will run out of time altogether. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate your presentation. Some great points. I've got our CEO wanted to kick off with City Road Master Plan, and then I'm going to refer to Deputy CEO and GM for everything after that. Thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Chris, we have got an agreement with the state government to undertake the City Road Master Plan. And so what we will be there as partners in the preparation of the City Road Master Plan. They are, and I'll get Roger Teal to give the exact amount that we've set aside in budget, but it's approximately $500,000. Now, that will be part of our contribution towards it, but recognising that City Road is the responsibility of the state government. So we don't want to have, you know, their costs transferred to the city, but we have to be partners in it. There are things in City Road that will be ours, footpaths and other amenities within it. So we want to be able to do it together. The Lord Mayor has reached out specifically to Minister Carroll and asked for the expediting of the City Road Master Plan. I've met with Paul Eunice, the Secretary of the Department of Transport, and Nick Foer, the Deputy Secretary who is responsible for City Road, and they have agreed that they'll be working jointly with us over the City Road Master Plan. Now, clearly, the intersection Power Street's the number one critical issue that they're paying attention to, but we're saying the overall master planning of that site becomes critical so that we are then in a position when we have plans to be able to lobby state government with South Bank Residents Association to lobby state government to therefore hopefully fund it in a forthcoming state government budget. Now, that's not to say, as I said, there are not things that we are responsible for that will need to be considered in future budgets by way of upgrades to City Road. I'll just hand over to Roger Teal, who I think's got a few more components to add in regards to City Road Master Plan.
Hi, Chris. Roger. Yeah, on? Yeah. Hi, Chris. Roger Teal. So in relation to the City Road Master Plan, as you probably know, there's six key actions from that plan from 2016 through to 2023. We have completed a number, as Justin just alluded to, City Road West, City Road East, which are actions one and three, will be delivered by the state. We've allocated approximately $650,000. Dollars this year to assist in the planning of that and advocating back into government to fund that project. So we've made that commitment. Some of the other works, as you will know, have been completed, like Alexander Avenue and expand the South Bank bike lanes. We're working on the Southern Undercross, which is the dog park, which will be delivered by approximately August, September this year. And there's works underway for the Northern Undercroft for planning as well. So we are working through that master plan, and you're right, the big chunk of it is the City Road East and West delivery. I think that answers the question.
Yeah.
Thank you. Chris?
Is there anything you can add about, you know, what I was asking about, who decides the priorities of which projects to choose?
Yes, so
just out of interest.
Yeah, a lot of the City Road Master Plan is really within the power of the state government, so that goes to the advocacy, the things that are within our control. That prioritisation is done here at Town Hall after consultation, and certainly out of the last forum, one of the elements that was loud and clear was public open space, which is why our council plan and budget includes allocation for that. It's why we'll stay focused on delivering those areas in the Kingsway Undercroft, and it's why, I mean, really, given the tragic accident at the corner of Power and City Road, the priority on that intersection, but overall making sure that we're addressing those safety outcomes for residents. So it's that open space, recreation, and its safety and security as priority focus areas at the moment. And I would say that we know that we need to do better, Chris, in delivering on the things that we make a priority. And so that's going to be a big focus for us going forward. We've also got many articulate and well-prepared, passionate South Bankarians and through the Residents Association, a constant flow of information and demands and holding us to account, and something that we really want to make a difference on in this council term.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Another South... Oh, sorry, Councillor Ball.
Is anyone able to answer Chris's question about concrete and embodied emissions?
Through you, Lord Mayor. Chris, you may be aware we have an action plan associated with our declaration of a climate and biodiversity emergency. Part of that is annual reporting on our greenhouse gas emissions and our carbon consumption and exploring opportunities for where that can be increased. One of the initiatives that we're actively working on right now, and this is our Climate Change and City Resilience branch within the organisation, working with our Capital Works branch around how can we continue to reduce the carbon emissions associated with the delivery of our capital works projects, including where we are using concrete and where there might be opportunities for alternative materials. So that's an active conversation happening between different subject matter experts within our organisation to advance our objectives in relation to net zero carbon emissions. And happy to share more information about that if that would be of interest after the meeting. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
And it may be that we can organise some presentations either at a forum or through the committee meetings, as the association meetings, as we go forward on some of the deep dives on those issues, Chris. Good. Okay, we are at another, I believe, South Bankarian, David Hamilton, who I think is joining us via Zoom.
Yes, thank you. look, today, in terms of the plan, I just want to focus on one number. That number's 52. And the question is, why is 52 such a key number in the plan? And that's the number of major initiatives detailed in the plan to be achieved in the next 4 years. But unfortunately, the plan, every one of the 52 initiatives is actually accorded the same priority for implementation. There's no budget allocated to any of the 52 initiatives, and there's no time frame for their implementation. And basically, that renders 52 meaningless in the context of any planning or budgetary framework for both councillors and residents. And really, this needs to be addressed in both the final plan, in the budget for the coming year, and in the subsequent years. It also raises an important question as to whether any organisation with the resources of the MCC can implement 52 major initiatives in a four-year period. Now, worryingly, the vision of the councillors who were elected last year to build better frameworks for consultation and involvement of residents at the neighbourhood level is not deemed a major initiative when it should be. That vision that they espoused sought to balance the needs of residents with the statewide role of the city and its key sporting, cultural, commercial, retail, and hospitality precincts. Both the plan and the budget fail to address how council will engage with residents in neighbourhoods like South Bank with its unique issues, much less how to localise services relating to planning, environmental health, bylaws enforcement, so council can deal with the issues that residents find annoying, whether it be garbage trucks, building works, personal safety, parking enforcement. In fact, the resources need to be devoted to addressing how council engages with neighbourhoods, and that needs to become a major initiative of council. Thank you very much.
David, thank you. And you've always been excellent at accountability. We're going to start backwards with your engagement with neighbourhoods, and then we'll go back to the major initiatives, funding and accountability around budget priority and timeframe. Just to say that attached to our budget this year are our neighbourhood statements. They are really the precursor to detailed plans and a change to our operational methodology so that we will have teams out in our neighbourhoods. They will be responsible for delivering on our neighbourhood plans, and we will be able to provide more transparency, accountability, and I think also championing of local issues into Town Hall. And the resources applied across the neighbourhoods will reflect the priorities in terms of activities and initiatives to be delivered in those neighbourhoods. We are all really excited about what is a major change to the way that we deliver here at Town Hall, and it is the work of our CEO as a fantastic idea on how we can reorganise ourselves to be more aligned, connected and focused on accountability, delivering and transparency. So we're looking forward to that. It will take us the next 12 months to operationalise that, but we have kicked off with those neighbourhood statements that are attached to the budget. Did you want to add anything else to that, CEO?
Look, I think that you've described it really well. We are looking at, therefore, the neighbourhood statements are the first step, and the next step is potentially looking at decentralising some of our staff into neighbourhoods, various locations, so that they can be closer to the service and operations and more connected with individual neighbourhoods, individual communities. So, you know, it's an exciting 12 months ahead as we begin to look at how we operationalise those neighbourhood plans.
Good. And then to our Deputy CEO, in relation to the budget prioritising and timeframes of the 52 major initiatives.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Firstly, I just wanted to reference an excerpt from our council plan around that neighbourhood approach to planning. And so what it does is it states that over the next 4 years, we will further explore collaboration with the community using a place-based approach to ensure that we tap into the rich knowledge and experiences across our diverse communities and neighbourhoods. Over time, the City of Melbourne will develop a complete repository of insights and intelligence for each of our neighbourhoods to allow us to understand more fully the impacts of long-term planning and investment decisions from a detailed place perspective. And I think, David, that's what you're asking us to do. It's to be able to engage at that neighbourhood level and understand priorities in that space and not necessarily across at a municipal-wide level. With respect to the major initiatives, the major initiatives have come out of the detailed engagement that we've undertaken with the community around the council vision and the draft council plan, and also the 6 strategic objectives that have been included within that council plan. So we're going through a process right now, subject to council's consideration of the formal documentation this evening, as to how we can operationalise and embed these major initiatives across our operating plans within the organisation to ensure that they can be achieved. We're also looking at how we can report in a transparent way over the term of the council to ensure that there is a line of sight as to how those major initiatives are progressing. I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Alison. Good. David, thanks so much for your submission this afternoon. We are now calling on Richard Hunt, who I believe is here at Town Hall. Richard, thank you. Come on up for your presentation. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Lord Mayor and councillors. I was just expecting to come and listen today, but I'll take this opportunity to share. Thank you. I've been a resident in South Bank for over 5 years now and thoroughly enjoy it and appreciate what Melbourne City Council are trying to do to make it an even more livable city. Thank you so much. One of those things I think would be great is if we could consider the children more. You know, I have a family and we have grandchildren as well, but finding some playground areas and play equipment is a bit lacking in our area. I just hear before we're doing something about a dog park, and that's great. But I think children, we need something more for children there. So that would be good to see. Another thing is the South Bank Boulevard. I believe there's quite an excess of expenditure on that one, way above our original estimates. Just plucking figures out of the air, I think $18 million was the original estimate. We spent about $50. Where did the extra money come from, and what suffered to put the extra money into South Bank Boulevard? And the other one is we've heard about the trucks on City Road. If they could go back through the tunnel, that would be great. I noticed that trucks are allowed to go through the Domain Tunnel, but why not the Burnley Tunnel? Because it's the Burnley Tunnel that's causing the problem for the trucks along City Road. And our apartment looks right down onto City Road, and it's pretty noisy. So thank you for your time.
Excellent, Richard. Thank you. And absolutely wonderful to think that more children can enjoy inner city living and visiting as well. There is a new playground coming with South Bank Boulevard in the next stage, so looking forward to that. And certainly as we go to new open space, we'll be doing consultation to understand what sort of uses residents want and need so that we can see what can be delivered through that investment. I know we're going to go to South Bank Boulevard in terms of budget, on time, on budget, in scope, but since I've since I am the one who spoke to Minister Carroll most recently about the City Road issue, unfortunately, trucks on City Road is something that the Victorian Government expect will continue for some time yet. And so the work has really then focused on how to better manage the way that they move, particularly around that intersection at Power and City Road. So that has been raised and we'll keep trying, but just to manage expectations on that, that's certainly their current position. Over to you, Alison.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. So firstly, just to extend on the open space discussion, the inclusion of a very significant amount of money in our budget this year, which we'll get to later when we get to the budget considerations, for open space in South Bank to the tune of $20 million is a very significant move by council to respond to those concerns that have been raised by South Bank residents around a lack of open space. So certainly in my history, I've never seen such a significant proposal put forward by council to respond to the needs around that open space, which is a fabulous thing. And I'm sure it has been received well by the South Bank residents. Making sure that we design those spaces for all ages, including children, I think is a really relevant point and one in which we will certainly take on board. In relation to the South Bank Boulevard and the history of South Bank Boulevard, I think that's well documented in media and so on. The point that I'd make is that there had been scope changes over time and that the South Bank Boulevard project is a number of stages, and we are now tracking very well in relation to the later stages of that project. We have learnt lessons in relation to a number of years ago, the way in which that project was delivered, and we've applied those lessons moving forward. So some of the things that we've done at the leadership of the Lord Mayor and our council is introduce a much tighter project management framework within the organisation, ensure that we have very strong due diligence around preparing cost estimates and defining scope of our projects, measuring our projects over time in terms of their time, cost and quality objectives. So we really have absolutely upped the ante in terms of the way in which we're applying best practice project management principles, not just to the South Bank Boulevard project, to all of the projects within our Council Works program. We are improving year on year in terms of the quantum of Council Works that we're delivering, and this year is tracking well. We're also gearing up because next year will be Council's most significant council works program in its history, and so we're already undertaking an enormous amount of planning right now to be ready to hit the ground running as of the 1st of July. So appreciate the concerns around South Bank Boulevard, but we've certainly applied those lessons moving forward, and we're really looking forward to delivering a very significant council works program for the community. Back to you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks so much, Alison and Richard. Thanks. Great to see you today and looking forward to these ongoing discussions and us delivering. To Mark Boyle, who's joining us via Zoom today. Mark.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to the group. Firstly, congratulations on the long-term plan and vision for Melbourne. It's what one would expect from a world-leading city. I've been involved in technology-enabled change for over four decades, working with a number of major corporations and governments around the world. And I think there's an opportunity for the city to apply a different lens to the changes that the plan offers. I think there's an opportunity to really look at creating some new revenue-generating business models, particularly around the use of data and the monetization of data via 5G deployment and Internet of Things devices. I think it will actually allow the city to really lead the world in the engagement of the participants in the city and leveraging technologies so that you can start generating new business models and opportunities for growth. It also presents an opportunity for the city to start developing and engaging with leaders in technology and establishing Melbourne as one of the leading cities in the world from a technology leadership perspective. The new opportunities for revenue will also ensure that major technology players will engage with the city in an effective manner, but it also allows you the opportunity to implement standards so that not just the major players can be involved, but other smaller organisations that will bring an agile, insightful and probably a broader view of the potential of data and transformation for the city to really make it, you know, one of the leaders on the global stage. We've been working with cities around the world for a number of years, and I think the opportunity is often missed to really leverage technology to help the city move forward. And I think Melbourne should grasp the opportunity and think differently and apply a different lens to the things that you have within the plan and see what new business models can develop. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. That sounds very exciting. We've dedicated a lot of time and resources to technology and how we can become a smarter city, and then your points about there being even revenue opportunities in that at a time like this is always well received. I think what would be good is we'll ask our lead on these issues, Michelle Fitzgerald, to perhaps contact you separately, that's okay, and set up a meeting for a more substantive discussion. And Michelle's nodding her head, Mark, so we're looking forward to that interaction and some of the follow-up discussions, and thanks for dedicating your expertise and experience to helping us be better and a better city, so thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to see if Luke Stowe is here.
I am, but I am a Mark Boyle's business partner, so I will leave it and join the conversation with Mark at a later stage. Thank you.
Thanks, Luke. Thank you for that. Excellent. I'm going to see if Vanessa has been able to join us. We miss Vanessa.
Dear Lord Mayor, unfortunately, no. Vanessa was unable to rejoin the meeting.
All right. Thanks, Beck, for letting us know. All right. Well, look, thank you so much to everybody who's provided a submission in our consideration of the council plan in this Future Melbourne committee meeting. All of your written submissions as well have been considered, and our management, together with councillors, but our management particularly, have provided feedback and recommendations on any necessary changes to our council plan as a result. We're going to move to a motion, but I did want to say that during COVID we really mobilised as a team and became a city of yes to so many initiatives and programs that were necessary for the survival and sustenance of people and businesses during difficult times. Our council plan outlines us as a city of possibility, which really encapsulates that sense of hope and excitement about what's possible here in Melbourne as we move forward and capturing that energy that Melburnians are renowned for. And I think a lot of the feedback today has also been about us being a city of delivery, and that's certainly noted amongst everyone here. We're going to councillors consider the motion that is on the screen here. I'm going to move that motion, which states that having considered the public feedback on the draft council plan, that we endorse that plan subject to changes that have been recommended by management following receipt of submissions, and those changes were set out in attachments 3 and 4 that we've all had the opportunity to consider prior to this meeting, and recommends that council adopts recommends to Council this evening the adoption of that Council plan incorporating the community vision, the municipal public health and wellbeing plan, and the changes, as we said, set out in attachments 3 and 4. I'm moving that motion. I'm looking for someone to second that motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you. I think I've really just spoken to that motion.
Sorry, Lord Mayor, before the debate begins, can we just clarify what attachments 3 and 4 mean? Because I think there might be changes to what we've seen earlier, and I just want to make sure that we are all on the same page.
That's a very good question, Councillor Lippitt, and they are the attachments that were 4 and 5 in the forum papers.
To preserve your right to speak during the debate, perhaps we can have a description of what the motion is, including the attachment, before we hear from you as the mover, if that's up to you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go for it. Over to you, Michael, as a quick presentation on this.
So, Lord Mayor... The attachments are essentially as circulated, and if we just scroll down, so we have attachment 5 is the one that's being projected at the moment, and the only changes are the ones that we discussed earlier. If we just scroll through, the change kept going down to, I think, the bottom, the addition was to... So if you see at the very bottom of the table there, we've added some additional words in there. So in where it says 2,400 plus number of trees removed in previous years or 3,000, whichever is more, is the additional part of that sentence. And that was substantially the change that was made to that one. And I think that was it on that that section. If I can just scroll down a bit further. Yep, so that was the only section on that one. And then the attachment 4, which we'd seen previously, is the summary of the submissions that we've just gone through now. So there are some others that are coming through on the budget one that comes through a little later.
I think, though, you have a draft motion up there to show us. Is that right? I think
that was just up here before we went to that. Yep.
Where it says attachments 3 and 4... But the attachments, say attachments 4 and 5, are they one and the same?
They are the same, yes. So
should we change that, or is it taken as read?
Take it as read.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything, and thank you for clarifying.
And just without prolonging the confusion on that, when we get to the council meeting, it's actually 4 and 5. So it's just a consistency thing. 3 and 4 in this meeting, 4 and 5 in the next meeting, but it's the same content.
Yeah, I've asked the question previously. It's still confusing because we don't have attachments 3 and 4 to the FMC papers, and that's why the question arose. I'm still not sure how that works, but if the governance is right, Michael, then we can go forward. And to members of the public, the tables that have just been on the screen will be public as soon as this meeting is over, so you'll be able to... go through and see the recommendations from management to changes to our council plan as a result of the feedback that was provided in submissions and feedback provided by councillors for changes to the council plan. Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. I'm moving the motion. Councillor Hakim is seconding the motion. I think I've more than spoken to the motion in the comments I've made. Really pleased to be supporting this council plan and very grateful to everybody who's provided such substantive feedback to ensure that it is better, and excited now that we can move into delivery. To you, Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I think I will keep it brief as well. We've spoken to this on a number of occasions. I'd like to first thank everyone for their feedback. Consultation is so important in this process, and to hear from you today as well. It has provided us with an opportunity to make, and officers have put forward some changes which are in our attachments today. The process was through a deliberative engagement process, and what I'm really proud of, it shows a strong community mandate for what we've put forward here. And it is now about delivery for a city of possibilities. Thank you, and I put it forward.
Thank you. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor, Deputy Lorbert?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just a perhaps procedural question just for
to make it really simple for people. Certainly in relation to the budget, I think the intention for this evening is that as part of the motion, we will include the amendments which are proposed to the budget after we've obviously discussed them following today's meeting. There'll probably be a half dozen or so. Can I suggest that we do something similar with the council plan that just makes it much easier for the public, and instead of having to turn through a 27-page document and pick out, you know, at various points where amendments are suggested, just to collate what the amendments are and include them in a single list of amendments?
That's,
I just think
that's what they are. That's what this table is.
Okay,
not this table, the table that's up there.
Okay, well, that's great to know that everyone's two steps ahead of me on that one. Great.
So the attachment in the forum papers this morning had the recommended changes and what had been changed in the council plan and the budget. We're about to come to budget in a minute.
Great.
Yep, okay. So any other speakers to this motion? I think I saw Councillor Leppett, yep.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm just conscious that a lot of people have made a lot of suggestions to us today, and it mightn't be completely clear as to how we're picking them all up, but I will try and be as quick as I can. And so I'll just focus on one of the strategic objectives that we set out for ourselves, which is the climate emergency, climate and biodiversity emergency. And I won't repeat my high-level comments. Those were had when we sent out the draft council plan. We've set a lot of targets and indicators for ourselves, whether it's on emissions reduction or major initiatives on batteries, which is still in here, and community scale batteries, and whether we can scale that up over the 4 years of our term. But one of the changes that's going to be in here as a result of the submissions is a new indicator on transport emissions based on our roads, and I want to thank management for their work on that, and Nick Dow for his submission on that issue. We've tightened up our targets and indicators on how many trees we're going to plant and clarified that tonight as well as waste reduction. But as the Deputy CEO has said today, this council plan, which is matched with a budget, is really all about open space. If you compare last year's four-year horizons budget with this year's four-year horizons budget, we've got an extra $200 million in there for open space. That's concentrated in urban renewal areas, and South Bank, Macaulay, Fisherman's Bend, Docklands, Arden is going to be the beneficiary of that. When we're talking about climate emergency and if we're talking about responding to what the community is asking for, I think that is going to be the absolute best indication that we are very much doing that. It's also a jobs-rich way of doing that in the response to COVID and a recession. So I'm very proud of not only the council plan's open space agenda, but the way that we continue to improve on that through public submissions to the council plan and the budget process, which we're about to hear from. Finally, on the City Road Master Plan, we've been fighting on this issue for years. Every item that council can deliver is fully funded. There are six actions there. Number six, bike networks, pretty much done. Number five, connect to the gardens, pretty much done. One and three, City Road East and West, can't be done without state government approvals because it's a state road, but we will do all the design work and push them as hard and fast as we can, as the Lord Mayor has said. Number two, the Kingsway Undercroft, fully funded in our budget. And then, of course, number four, the Arts Precinct Connections is 100% a state government project. So this council plan accounts for the full delivery of the City Road Master Plan, noting, however, that the state government still is responsible for funding, approving and delivering certain aspects of the on-road upgrades to City Road Master Plan. But there is an absolute commitment from everyone on this council to push as hard and as fast as we can for those urgent and necessary public safety upgrades and deliver all the amenity upgrades while we do it. And you can see our commitment there through the fact that we're publishing 4 years of capital works upgrades now rather than one, and that's another improvement that you'll see compared to previous budgets. So that's my snapshot of one area, climate emergency and public safety, as to how we're taking on board community feedback. But as the Lord Mayor said, we'll publish that list of recommendations that's going to go to Council tonight. I just want to thank everyone who's made a submission. The number of submissions has been brilliant, and we've read through all of them, and the engagement level has been higher than in the two previous Council plans that I've been involved on in this Council, and I really, really welcome it.
Thank you. Other comments on this motion? Then thanks everyone for bearing with us. We are putting this motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thanks, team. We're now moving to agenda item 3.2, which is consideration of public feedback and matters arising on the draft budget 21-22 and the revenue and rating plan. We have a number of submitters, and I do appreciate we're running late, so thanks to everyone for hanging in there. I am calling on our first speaker, Patrick Donovan, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee. And I think, Pat, you're on Zoom today.
Yes, hello, Lord Mayor. Hi, councillors. Thanks for the opportunity. The City of Melbourne requires significant economic investment to reimagine and reposition it as one of the great city nightlifes in the world after being obliterated by the pandemic. I condemn the council on developing an ambitious budget to reactivate and revive the city, injecting $100 million into the revitalization fund and $2 million to the event partnership program. Early initiatives such as the FOMO freebies campaign and meal rebates are a good start, but they're just band-aid solutions. I encourage the council to back the recently appointed nightmare with resources to develop a strategy similar to Sydney's 24-hour city strategy to reimagine the city's nighttime offering, build consumer confidence and bring people back to the city so that Melbourne can reclaim its rightful status as one of the world's most livable cities and the live music capital of the world. This can only be achieved by the council investing in a nighttime economy department, as councils have done in cities such as London and New York, to support the vision and objectives of the nightmare and the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee to ensure Melbourne continues to be classified beside those great cities which have already started this recovery process. We need to move very quickly or we'll be left behind. Sydney and Brisbane, which is planning significant investment in the city on the assumption that it will secure the 2032 Olympic Games, are more advanced in their recovery plans and have been poaching events and staff from Victoria. The council should also consider developing live music and entertainment precincts where clusters of activity are located or should be encouraged based on reforms passed by the planning minister last year. This can encourage activity while focusing on safety and diversity. Continuing the state's 24-hour public transport initiative from Thursday to Sunday will be key to this, so advocating for this to continue will be very important. Existing live music venues need to be supported through funding and event partnerships. They are operating at 30% at the moment and are hemorrhaging revenue. And potential new precincts and venues should be activated and encouraged at sites such as Central Pier in the Docklands. The council should also encourage investment in new venues and capitalise on the state government's recent exemption to the late night freeze, allowing for the first time new liquor licences for late night live music venues up to 1,000 capacity. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Patrick. And thank you for your participation on our Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee as well. Great points. I'm looking to Michael Tanache to respond to some of those items.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Lord Mayor. In regards to the nighttime economy, clearly it's one of Melbourne's key strengths and it has been severely impacted. Is that working? By COVID restrictions. I think the recent creation of the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee does bring together some key leaders from retail, hospitality, creative industries, government representatives, planning and safety experts. The committee's role is to advise council on how it can address challenges facing the nighttime economy. This will include ideas on how to get people back into the city and ways we can work together to support businesses that are getting back on their feet. In regards to events and reactivation, council does note that it's got a $100 million contribution to the Melbourne City Revitalisation Fund in partnership with the Victorian Government and its commitment to reduce, as part of that, event fees, some event fees by up to 50%. So we are looking to certainly support the recommendation and the feedback and the live music and entertainment industry is a key area that we are looking to drive further.
Thank you, and a lot of ongoing work there, so that'll be fantastic. Thanks, Patrick. Points well made. Zoe Edwards, who is here with us at Town Hall, over to you, Zoe, for your submission. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to present today. I'm the ASU organiser at City of Melbourne, and I'm here to represent the largely low-paid workers who earn as little as $48,000 who work here at the City of Melbourne. And as you're aware, it has been nearly 3 years since they've had a pay increase. Now, as you're aware, we're obviously in negotiations for a new enterprise agreement, and the current management wage offer on the table is, as it relates to the financial year that you're debating today, is no back pay for the nearly 3 years with which they haven't received a pay rise, and a 1% offer for this coming financial year. Now, we do understand that councillors obviously are not permitted to be involved in enterprise agreement negotiations and very much respect that, but you do set the financial parameters in the budget, which does dictate the wage outcomes that are then negotiated in those enterprise agreements, and that's why I'm here today. Because council officers are advising that because of the policy decisions made by council, there are not sufficient funds left over to meet back pay and the ask for a fair pay rise in 21-22. To give you an idea about the effect this is having on City of Melbourne workers, I want to read an email that I received from a member today. I understand it's been a difficult year, and most of us have certainly been happy to patiently wait for the EA to be finalised while we are dealing with more serious matters. But that was with the belief that we would be back paid, because we always have been before, so we weren't that worried about it. If City of Melbourne had been clear that they were not intending to back pay, then perhaps employees would have been more vocal about having the agreement signed earlier. We have all been working hard while also dealing with increased mental health issues and partners, etc., who have lost their jobs. So simply telling us we are lucky to have been able to keep our jobs while also forcing people to come back into the office to spend money in the city without their desks is really insulting. That gives you an indication of how staff are feeling at the moment and how they are receiving the enterprise bargaining experience. So what the ASU is seeking is for council, we are seeking a budget amendment, but we're also seeking clarification about the funds that are allocated in this budget to meet staff wage outcomes. And I guess in putting this to you this afternoon, not seeking a management response, because of course we've spent a lot of quality time together discussing these issues, and will again tomorrow at the bargaining table, but we are seeking councillors' considerations of these issues and for your consideration in adopting the budget tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Zoe, and we have received your correspondence and your submissions as well. As you stated, it's not for councillors to get involved in these discussions. Justin, did you want to add something?
Yeah, look, I will. Look, Zoe, thanks for raising the issues, and you're right. I mean, under the Act, the Local Government Act, the enterprise agreement sits between me, myself as CEO, and with staff. I think we went to Fair Work Commission on Friday, and Tim Lee, the Commissioner, directed us back to the table, and we're at the table in good faith. I think we've got scheduled, two, three, four meetings, whatever the number required are to go forward. We have budgeted and we spend, in terms of salaries of staff in the organisation, $180 million. I do just want to pick up on two points you raised, because I think it's really important for not just councillors but for the community to hear this also. And I think it was the ASU that stood up and talked about how well the City of Melbourne responded during COVID. We made the decision almost at day one that we wouldn't lay staff off, and other councils did. What we did do was redeployed a lot of staff. We were the first city, and other councils followed, to give 2 weeks COVID special leave, in particular for people who are primary carers. And it was without primary carers, people having to homeschool children, etc. And it was without question. You didn't have to prove anything. No sick leave, etc. It was just additional leave and an additional gift. And I can tell you this, which is we have given special conditions to hundreds of staff to deal with personal circumstances. We are, and there's a really fine balance here between we have a flexible policy in terms of our staff and our organisation, and at the same time it's challenging in that bringing people back into the city. It's hard for us as a city to, say, to ANZ or to Telstra, or as we are saying regularly in councillors to state government, bring your staff back to the city, because you know, the daily population in Melbourne is 1 million people pre-COVID. 450,000 of those are office workers. At best, in terms of the best, the numbers we got back across the whole of the city were 150,000. So with 250,000-odd people not in the city every day, the impact is we've seen massive closure in retail spaces. Now, I'm saying that to give context to our most important asset remains our staff. We will support our staff. We'll be back at the table. I think we, in fact, have a meeting tomorrow. Yep. In terms of the EA table. We will reach an agreement, I am sure, in terms of going forward to make sure that we continue to be an employer of choice. We are. When we advertise positions at the City of Melbourne, we often are oversubscribed to the tune of, you know, several hundred people that can apply for jobs at the city. We are super conscious. The jobs that you mentioned, the $48,000, they are some of them are part-timers. They are level crossing supervisors. They are lifeguards in recreation centres. I want to say this, our lifeguards in recreation centres that were casual employees, we also didn't stand down through COVID. We offered them redeployment opportunities in some of our other programs. So I go back, our staff are our most important employees. We will be sitting down and negotiating in good faith. We know that we need to strike an agreement going forward, and we need to recognise, you know, what is reward and recognition for staff. So look forward to Michael Tenace's leading the ENA negotiations. The RSU has had a good historic relationship with the City of Melbourne, and I commit to it. We'll have an ongoing good relationship with the City of Melbourne going forward. But I think let's leave the bargaining to the table tomorrow.
May I just quickly respond to that, Lord Mayor? Look, appreciate that, and obviously members are very grateful for the support provided through COVID. All they are asking of councillors tonight, you know, the area with which they have a say on this issue, is for sufficient funding to be provided in the budget so that their wages keep pace with cost of living, given it has now been nearly 3 years without a pay rise. But I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Zoe. And we have seen your other submissions as well, so thank you. And reiterate, we all agree that our team is our most important asset. Did you have a question? Councillor Deutsch.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Justin. And thank you, Zoe. Ooh, where have you disappeared to? Also, I just want to especially say thank you to all the staff here at the City of Melbourne and the incredible work that they've put in, not just this year, not just last year, but the continued work. I have three questions for our officers, and I'm just going to put them to you all together. Firstly, has the executive taken any salary increases in the last 2 years or since the conclusion of the EA in 2019? I also understand that in the 19-20 budget, funding was set aside for wage increases that hasn't yet been spent, and what's been happening with this funding. And going ahead, can the budget provide any flexibility or opportunities for any further wage negotiations?
Look, I'll just in the order they've given. Executive salary increases, no. I mean, I think the only time is where we've employed a new executive. You know, negotiation of salary at that point in time. So all executive salaries have, for want of a better word, been frozen, and in fact a number of the executives sitting there at the time gifted up leave or made commitments back in terms of their own salaries at the time. And I'm looking at everyone on the front table there, and every one of those individuals did at the time of COVID. So there's been no increases to executive salaries, and nor would it be appropriate in terms of where we are during COVID at this point in time. The second question in terms of wage increases, or what we did do was we adopted, this is our second deficit budget. Our first deficit budget was last year. And so we were looking at savings right across the organisation. We redeployed some staff to state government that saved on some salaries. Now, that was to treat with our deficit budget in terms of our salary spending. So it wasn't, we were deliberately trying to underspend in salaries, not by underpaying, but absolutely by way of having staff redeployed and balancing that commitment to we would not be making staff redundant or standing staff down. And to do that, we used Work for Victoria programs. We redeployed, Linda, I believe, 40 or 50 staff into the State Health Office again, to keep them fully active and employed through that process. Your third question, Councillor Deutsch, is one of, again, I'd say we have a budget, a salary budget of $180 million. We have a 6.5% offer over the next 4 years on the table, and we are at the bargaining table again tomorrow to have conversations with the various union and employee representatives.
Good. Any other questions? Then we're going to move. Thanks, Zoe. We're going to move to our next speaker, Mary Lou Howie, who I believe is joining us via Zoom.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. When the CBD became a ghost town overnight due to the lockdown, I photographed queues of QVM customers snaking down Queen, Victoria and Elizabeth Streets, waiting to get into the food halls. The open air sheds of the upper market attracted its fair share of customers who parked in the open air at grade car park. Market ground level operations made it safer for traders as well in this pandemic environment. Despite the broad and huge economic contribution QVM makes to Melbourne, as per our written submission, the market has taken a blow like the rest of Melbourne, but has been the only sign of life. The $52.2 million expenditure allocated to QVM infrastructure, I think that's page 42 of the budget, cannot be justified nor is required for QVM's core business and viability. This disproportionate budget item alarmingly indicates the council's intention to erode the heritage values of QVM by completely changing the way this heritage market operates. In 2018, the People's Panel back then rejected the grandiose QVM infrastructure plans, yet this budget still persists with infrastructure gold plating without factoring in how our world has changed. What is the justification of this infrastructure gold plating? Ratepayers should rightly expect that a budget infrastructure investment would be based upon a cost-benefit analysis. Yet there appears to be no evidence of this underpinning this level of expenditure. In fact, this budget is setting QVM and council up for further losses in this regard. Market tenuous as it is, unnecessary construction works causing further disruption will certainly adversely impact on trade, will result in further trader attrition, and QVM will become a council white elephant lost to Melbourne. In light of this, friends of QVM urge the council to step back, reflect and reset. Health and safety, and simply allow traders in these fragile economic circumstances go about earning their living and reallocate much of this expenditure to where it's needed elsewhere. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Lou. And I'm looking to Michael Tanache, who's going to give a brief response.
Yes, thank you, Mary Lou, for your submission. I mean, you raise a number of very critical matters as part of the renewal of QVM. Importantly, they were all undertaken within a fully approved business case, which is currently being reviewed, but it is certainly a business case that we are still operating to and aligning with. The $52 million spend this year is creating 900 jobs. It is preserving the market and is being implemented with full alignment to heritage regulations and values. The renewal will ensure the market is a safe, sustainable and efficient place to operate for the 600 small businesses who operate there. July 21 also marks a major milestone in the renewal program with the opening of the new 500 car parking spaces at the QVM market. Future Victoria Market Management has also released its Queen Victoria Future Market Strategy as well. I will go on to note that since April 2020 and since we've entered COVID, the City of Melbourne and QVM management business has invested in excess of $12 million to support the traders in Queen Victoria Market. Food traders have had in excess of $5 million of support, general merchandise traders $6 million of support, and hospitality in excess of $1.5 million. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Comments from councillors? Councillor Lippitt.
Just a question, please. The relevant major initiative that we've put in next year's budget and the council plan, but will be funded in next year's budget, is to protect Queen Victoria Market as a traditional open-air market through heritage restoration and the provision of essential services and facilities that enhance the customer and trader experience, including projects such as the shed restoration, food hall, trader shed, market square, waste and logistics facility, and future developments to the south of the market. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, but to get to Mary Lou's submission, can I just ask if... management, I'm not sure if this question's for Justin or Michael or Roger, but if we can have even a very, very rough indication of what the next step is on setting the strategic direction for rolling out this major initiative. We know that we're expecting an updated business case. We're going to consider a retail plan and an updated implementation framework. Is it too early to say ever so approximately when that might be and if they're coming together? Any update on this issue would be welcome. Thank you very much.
Councillor Lebbett, I can note that the revised business case is currently underway. That's a key, component of reviewing the current performance, the timing of many of the works with a COVID lens, which is absolutely critical, and also how the future market strategy is implemented aligned with that as well. So there are three key components there. I'll hand over to Roger just to explain some further in regards to capital.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Councillor Lippitt. So yes, the next 4 years is about delivery at Queen Vic Market. There's a budget of about $170 million to be delivered, and as you say, about $50 million next year. It's a significant amount of work, and we are going through intense planning to ensure that we minimise disruption to the market and the traders and the operators. So yes, we're undertaking that work and a lot of planning around that. And I think it's a very exciting period for the next, particularly 2 years, of how we start to bring a lot of the planning over the last 6 years, reviewing the business case, as you say, to make sure it's still relevant, to bring to a conclusion the renewal of the market over the next 4 years.
Thank you, and thanks, Mary Lou, for your question and submission. I'm calling on Chris Jupp again. Did you want to present on the budget, Chris? No. You've done yours. Thanks so much. Michael, over to you and welcome to Town Hall. Thank you for your submission.
Thank you very much. My name is Michael Pettit and I am Secretary of the Protectors of Public Lands Victoria. I followed but in no way replaced the founder of the organization, the late Julian Bell. Her vision was to expand support and advocacy for parks and open space beyond Royal Park to other natural spaces across Victoria. And late last year, a very welcome event occurred in Melbourne's oldest historic and treasured open space, Royal Park. That was the formation of the Royal Park Stakeholders Network that includes the zoo, State Netball Hockey Center, Urban Camp, other venues, and the three major community groups that work there and have donated incalculable time and effort to maintain Royal Park. The Stakeholders Network will meet a few times a year to discuss mutual concerns and opportunities to work together. In May, there was unanimous agreement that there's a need now to kickstart the implementation of the concept plan, which the council has for the safe upgrade of the dangerous S-bend on Poplar Road at the Royal Park rail station and tram intersection. Here's why. This year, the elongated E-class trams will be letting off more visitors directly across from the Royal Park station. There will be many more visitors to the park, to the zoo, and the upgraded Netball Hockey Center will be promoting increased use of public transports at their venues, a really good outcome
and better than a five-story car park at the zoo. What's missing today is a safe way to easily navigate by tram, pusher, bicycle, or pedestrian crossing a popular road at the tram-stopped railway station. Lives will continue to be at risk, and pedestrians dash across the street for lack of crosswalks and signaling coinciding with drivers seeking to navigate the S-bend while drivers try to... Okay. I'd like to pass that around. That shows there's a car there where that woman is pushing that tram and another woman is looking back, not happily, at the try to navigate. We have heard that the existing plan needs to await the review of the Royal Park Master Plan. It does not. That's not what your transport study says, and that's not the reality. It's ready. Another argument is there haven't been enough deaths and injuries to justify the money. We should not have to wait until a family outing to the zoo or a sport team suffers an avoidable tragedy to address this dangerous road crossing. Your own budget papers say how important these values are to the council. To close, I realize that you're here today to talk dollars, but also cents, and the sense of the representatives of the Royal Park organizations and community groups is that in this historic park that we get the shovels out and get on with a sensible addition to the budget you consider today. Thank you very much.
Michael, thank you. Any questions, councillors? We've had detailed submissions, of course, as well, but thank you for bringing these photos in. I'm sure everybody's read those. And we're going to go to our Deputy CEO to respond. Thanks.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you for your submission, Michael, and also to the other stakeholders within the Royal Park Network. As you mentioned, we do have a concept plan that looks at that particular intersection and proposes some safety improvements, and that the cost estimate associated with those safety improvements is approximately $1.5 million. However, because of the number of submissions we've received and because of the issues at that site, we're recommending to Council this evening that they actually allocate $50,000 in our budget next year to progress that design, to advance that design and to prepare a more detailed design. It is important, though, to note that we do need the Department of Transport and Yarra Tram's involvement and approval to make changes to that intersection. And so part of the rationale to Council in allocating a further $50,000 to advance that design is to leverage that amount and call upon Department of Transport and Yarra Trams to come to the table to partner with us to identify and advance a solution and safety improvements at that intersection. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
If I could just respond to that, please. I frequently go to Royal Park. I live in Brunswick. And I see near misses, and I see terrible instances at that location because people are trying to beat the train, okay? And people are trying to get to the zoo, and they're pushing prams, all right? I go home tonight, let me tell you something, and I worry about that, okay? I don't run any of those venues, and I don't work on this council, but I worry about that when I go to sleep at night, and I hope you all will too, and I think $50,000 next year is not enough. I think you need to get that going. And if that means meeting with the zoo and a meeting with the state government, do it. There are lives at stake here. The last thing I want is an incident there in front page in the Herald Sun and the zoo, and then they say, well, they were told to do that years ago, and they didn't do it. That wouldn't look good for this council, and I respect this council. It does good work, and I don't think you can afford to wait. And I love the $50,000, but I don't think it needs that much study. I think you need to get the actors together and start building that.
Michael, point well made, and we've got our priorities with the Department of Transport at the moment, the City Road and Power Street intersection where we did have an accident, and we had been told by residents for a long time that something needed to happen at that intersection, has certainly pushed along our discussions there. And we're committed to prioritising that in our discussions with Department of Transport as well to see some action.
Thank you
at
very
Poplar.
Much.
So, and the $50,000 will help support work that needs to happen around design. Councillor Lippitt.
Thanks, Lord Mayor, and thanks, Michael. Just a few more follow-on questions, if I could. Deputy CEO, how quickly can we engage with the Department of Transport and Yarra Trams once the new financial year starts in a couple of days? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Thank you for prompting that question. We do see it as a priority to engage with both the stakeholders of Royal Park and the Department of Transport and Yarra Trams, and we will do that within the first quarter of this financial year. So we will commence... we are having those discussions and have had those discussions, but we will advance the priority and seek to meet with both the Department of Transport, Yarra Trams and the Royal Park Network within the next 3 months so that we can get together and work out how we can prioritise this and make it happen.
A follow-up. Is there something that can be done immediately to help people cross from the Royal Park station to the zoo without having to risk their lives? Is there something that can be done? Can a person out there with one of these crossing guards or something, especially when it's busy?
Michael, let's have a look at some interim measures, I think, is what you're talking about, and that's what we've done at South Bank as well, is identify. The first one didn't work, but the next lot have seemed more effective. So let's have a look at some interim measures while we get the long-term outcome fixed. And please assure everybody that you represent that you've done a brilliant job at putting their case this evening, and we do appreciate it. Councillors, any other comments?
And the next
comments?
Question, Lord Mayor, was just on the detailed design, whether that's a one-year job or whether that's able to be expedited as well to give Council the potential flexibility mid-financial year with all the regular caveats on affordability and so on to fund a project. How quickly might the design work be able to be completed? Thanks, Roger.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. So to Deputy CEO's point, we will we'll look to accelerate that. We'll have an update by September that will align with what you just said. So to answer your question, yeah, we'll accelerate in the first quarter of this upcoming financial year, which is in 2 days' time, as you said.
All right, good. Yeah, and given the number of submissions, it's right that we have this much discussion about it as well, so thank you. That's terrific. We're moving on, and our next speaker is well known to us, Artemis Padicci, who is coming to present this evening. Thank you, Artemis.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Council. First of all, I wanted to say something that probably you don't hear as much in your position, where you get to hear about where there's room for improvement. One thing that I want to say, representing the South Bank Sustainability Group and our 180 members, is a job well done with this budget. This draft budget, where we see the climate and biodiversity emergency being a strategic goal. It's been a long time that we've been saying that we need to see more action and more meaningful action around climate change and around climate action and what we can do to make sure that our city is doing better in terms of making sure that we're doing our part to reduce our emissions and make sure that we have more green space. Finally, we get to see South Bank in having a prominent role in this draft budget. We've been feeling like the forgotten child of City of Melbourne for a while. So it's good to see an investment around our much-loved suburb so we can feel that it's a neighbourhood. It's not just a transient place where people live to get to work easily. We can't wait to see the green reserve space and the $20 million investment around that. One very important point that we did want to make around that is that we want to see an activated green space, not a passive one, meaning that it becomes a space where the community gets to come together and interact, and we get to meet our neighbors, and we're not bombarded by the constant sound of traffic as well. So hopefully a location that's a bit protected from traffic, and we get to engage all of our senses with enjoying that green space and enjoying that community interaction. We find that very important. We've seen, either for better or worse, we do have a lot of residents approaching our group when they have comments or questions around what's going on around sustainability. And one thing that is highlighted again and again is how important that community garden has been for people's mental and physical health during the lockdown. And we know as city life becomes more and more stressful, people are going to have more and more of a need of that activated green space. So we want to make sure that the community aspect is taken into account when planning and delivering that plan. One point that I did want to make around that as well in terms of the communication and the delivery of that space is with certain projects in the past, we might have seen a good communication up front, but not in the continuance of delivering that project and any changes done along the way, which we've seen, but they haven't been communicated. So a lot of people get frustrated about that. So we do want to make sure that there is some sort of communication throughout the project and that the community input is taken into account. And as it was mentioned, that there's people from our council actively going out and reaching and communicating with the different community groups residents in South Bank so that everybody's needs are taken well into account. We also want to make sure that the economic development and that point of making sure that the sustainability development goals, got to it at the end, are taken into account for the investment and the spend for our city. We know already that either the economy or environment is a myth. It's been proven by a lot of cities and countries across the world. So it's great to see that Melbourne is embracing this opportunity to show how it can develop and grow and reestablish a lot of the beautiful things that we love about our city and doing it in a sustainable way that's not harming our environment. So in, I guess, conclusion, thank you for including South Bank and giving it such a strong push into this draft budget. Finally, we want to make sure that we see a lot of these plans put into action in a way that it is in collaboration with the community. Well done for having the climate and biodiversity emergency there as a strategic goal, and we can't wait to see the action that comes out of it and make sure that the targets that you set are not for 4 years down the road, but we see a lot of that action and a lot of that circular economy and reduction of waste happening now. Thank you.
Thank you, Artemis. Any other comments for Artemis? No? Thank you. We've got a couple of other speakers from South Bank, and then we're going to make some responses. But Artemis, thanks for your passion and also your leadership locally on those issues is appreciated. David Hamilton, who presented to us on council plan. David, did you want to present to us also on our budget? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Lord Mayor. Look, again, the number 52 is pretty important because that's the total cost, as we know, of the South Bank Boulevard project, Dodds Street, etc. And we all know and acknowledge that this project has been a pretty significant failure in terms of project management, design, consultation, and it's been a lesson for the council in how not to manage a major capital project. And the experience of this project in South Bank goes to the very heart of why developing better consultative mechanisms and involvement in residents in neighbourhood projects should be a major initiative for the council to deliver the council's vision. And I think as a starting point, there needs to be a post-completion traffic management consultation with the actual residents impacted so that issues that they've identified can be addressed as a matter of urgency. And there are some significant traffic management problems that are quite clearly evident in what has been delivered and what is going to be the final product. Now, separately, turning to page 160 of the budget in the neighbourhood snapshot, it states that one of our benefits is that the South Bank structure plan is going to continue to be worked on. That seems to be a 10-year-old plan which has been ignored by developers and planners and observed more in the breach than in performance. Separately, there's some unstated progress on the South Bank urban forest plan. And unless the palm trees outside the ABC constitute part of the South Bank urban forest, there's no real impact on what that means. Finally, it really is a clear issue that in this neighbourhood, council needs to be able to better engage with the neighbourhood and especially owners' corporations in all of the towers on all of the any issues that it is giving consideration to. And going back to my earlier theme, the need to bring services closer to this neighbourhood that directly impact on people's lives. So that's the issues of the annoying garbage trucks, the building works, the personal safety, parking enforcement. Thank you very much.
David, thank you so much. And we're going to hear from one more speaker from South Bank and then we'll go for some responses. And there's been some overlap already, I think, overall in terms of engagement and communication that we'll need to improve on going forward. Thanks for your submission. The number 52, I think, will be a number that we all remember over the next year. So thank you. Tony Penner, your turn to provide your submission this afternoon. Thanks, Tony.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, thank you for this opportunity for, once again, another budget. I think this is my eighth budget submission now. And I've noticed you've changed the format. There's so much to say in regard to this, and 3 minutes is not a lot. I'd like to offer a lot of accolades, but I'm going to spend the time on focusing on the things which I think are deficient. But please don't underestimate those accolades for this budget, for South Bank in particular. It's great to see there's a lot of representation here from South Bank, which should send a message to this council that South Bank is passionate about their community. There's a change to the format, and it has confused me, and I'm glad that Rohan raised it in so far that in the past, when we're making our submission, we've already got the response from the officers as to what will be happening in the budget. I'm here blind. I've made a submission. I don't know how that submission has been received. In years gone by, we would get a response, and then I would make my submission based on that response. So I'm not sure how my submission was received by those council officers. There were a lot of questions in my submission, and I certainly hope that they will be answered in some way, shape, or form at some point. City Road Master Plan, excellent. Finally, I think 4 years in a row I've been up here complaining that it's behind schedule and it's not budgeted. Great to see that it's in there. After the results of South Bank Boulevard, there's some trepidation in the community as to how that will actually roll out and the delays that we might experience. Kingsway Undercroft, $650,000. You know, we're not sure what we're actually going to get for that. Ideally, we're really concerned about the basketball court that we are expecting to lose with the development in the Boyd Park. Does this mean that we will have that created and the basketball court active in there before that development starts? That's one of the key issues for that space. Of course, $25 million for public opens for open space reserve. Absolutely tremendous effort by council in that regard. We've got a lot of questions as to where you're going to find land in South Bank to adopt that money. But of particular note, South Bank, our committee in particular, the Residents Association, was disappointed the council wasn't able to reach out to us and advise us that that was going to be in the budget. We have probably been one of the most vocal groups in regard to open space, and this council certainly knows that, yet when they've got something so significant to bring to the community's attention, they fail to reach out to the very people that have been advocating for this. Disappointing. We read about it in the local newspaper. This council can do better for communication. If I'm not mistaken, almost every single budget that I'm up here, I'm complaining about communication or lack thereof. We've had to move motions, thanks Rohan Leppert, for putting motions to improve the communication. And even that sadly didn't work. South Bank Structure Plan is mentioned numerous times in that budget. We at our South Bank Forum, we identified that the South Bank Structure Plan appears to not even be a living document. There are 10 years, there's goals in there which were meant to be completed after 10 years, and we learnt at our forum that none of those goals had been achieved in that 10 years. We had a number of questions that were taken on notice 3 months ago at that forum. To date, we still not have received a reply for those questions on notice. Disappointing that we need to be chasing up responses for that event. Overall, I love the new buzzer. Wakes us up. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you very much again for your contribution, not just today, but constantly in representing your community. Thank you. Now, team, we've got one more speaker, and I'm just checking. Sue Dite, are you also a South Bankarian?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Apologies. Sue notified us very late after lunch that she was unable to attend.
Oh, okay, today. Good. All right. So we're down. Thank you, Tony. You're our last speaker this evening, last submitter. We've had questions on sustainability and open space and prioritisation, particularly around recycling and waste. We've had questions about South Bank Boulevard and the structure plan, shade and delivery of services, and then Tony's extensive written submission as well as the forum we had a few weeks ago, 3 months ago, and a lot of that is to do with comms and engagement and status of where we're at on plans that were supposed to have been implemented but haven't yet. That's a summary, and I believe, Roger, you're going to respond to a number of those items.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you to Richard, David, Artemis and Tony. So obviously a lot of interest around South Bank. I think I said to you, Tony, on the 23rd of March, I am an ex-resident of South Bank. I walk around South Bank and the TAN quite often and was actually walking around there on Saturday, checking on the progress of some of our works. So you've mentioned a lot of things, and I think since our forum we had with the Residents Association and yourself in March, we have been busy. We are reviewing the South Bank structure plan within the City Design Studio, and we will come back to councillors with an update in September. It is a living document and we are working through it. It's a 10-year plan with a 30-year vision. So we'll do a gap analysis and an audit against how we're tracking on that structure plan as we said we would. So we will come back and report in on that. At the same time, we've been busy, and as we've now publicised, is the neighbourhood plan, or the South Bank neighbourhood plan. You know, I've committed nearly $39 million of associated works, and as you say rightly so, $20 million to open space, $3.5 million to Dodd Street and South Bank Boulevard, pleasingly, $3.6 million to the South Bank Promenade Stage 1 that we recently got a funding agreement with the state. We're in planning for that or design with the view that we will start just after Christmas in January on that project, and over $1 million in asset and management works, trees, paths, footpaths, roads and alike. And I agree with you, you know, we need to do better in South Bank and we will. It's my commitment on behalf of the ELT here, and we do need to get into the detail around trees, around footpaths, on upgrading stuff, and we'll make sure we do that over the next 12 months. I think the neighbourhood plan and the way we'll report that, Michelle, each month will keep us very accountable to residents on how we're tracking. So we've got the plan committed, $38 million, and we will provide updates on how we track accordingly. And I'm sure the Lord Mayor and the Deputy Lord Mayor will make me accountable for that as well. Other things that you've brought up, or the four of you have brought up, you're right, the dog park will be in August. The Northern Undercroft, we'll update you on the sequencing of that, but we've got money in the budget to plan that for the basketball courts to be delivered into next year, to commence the work, I should say. We'll keep you updated on what we're doing there and how we decant, if you like, from Boyd Street to the Northern Undercroft. And I was just going to touch on, I think they're the main items you brought up. The South Bank Boulevard legacy, the delivery legacy, and lessons learnt, and absolutely lessons learnt from that project. and we, you know, we're moving forward. So we're getting through the next stages: 5A, 5C, 5B, and they'll all be. Say. And stage. Yes, and stage six. Yeah, stage six, which is for everyone, City Road to the Red Steps, if you like that section. We're very close to having a funding agreement to progress that work and to go into design. So stage six is on our radar. Stage 5A will be completed in September. 5B, which is the rock playground, if you like, will go out to tender very shortly in August, and then get into a contract award. So we are progressing along there. Faulkner Street, I walked down on Saturday myself to look at the works, the extension of the footpath and other things around there. So rightly so, there is a focus on South Bank in the budget. It's top priority for our division, and we've got a real focus on it.
Lord Mayor, can I just add one comment? That's okay. Thank you. And through you, Lord Mayor. Tony, I think what's important, and I remember this conversation more than 12 months ago, what we committed 18 months ago to an audit of South Bank Boulevard, an internal audit to go, what are the lessons learned? And those lessons have been applied and introduced, which is, and one of them is tighter project management in terms of how projects are designed, and that we don't design as we go and construct, which might have been an historic case with South Bank Boulevard over multiple years. So the disciplines that are in place by the Capital Works team and project management are giving councillors confidence, Mayor CEO confidence, that we are delivering on our capital works agenda in a timely way within budget, etc. So I think, you know, hopefully you are seeing those changes on the ground, because I think that we're certainly seeing them as projects are being initiated, and, you know, proof in the pudding is we've had our best ever, as we close out the financial year, our best ever percentage delivery of capital works budget.
Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just two quick questions on South Bank issues, if I could. The budget has 4 years of CapWorks funding published, and of course those future years CapWorks projects are subject to significant change in future years as we reassess our priorities on an annual basis, and so they're all indications. But on page 88 of 248, there's $9 million earmarked for City Road Master Plan. My understanding is that's primarily for the city for the Kingsway Undercroft Northern. Is that correct? Okay, so that's on page 88 for fuller context. The other question is in relation to page 153. So the neighbourhood snapshots are on page 153 of the council budget, which is a council meeting paper for the next meeting, which is where I'm looking. And we have as a key initiative, act on the review of central city waste regulations and waste truck movement restricted areas. Can I just ask management, is it the intention that next financial year we're acting on that review and looking at HODL grid streets only, or is that something that would be worth duplicating for the other two central city neighbourhoods, being Docklands and South Bank, or is that an overcommitment? It's just that we had a question from David about what are we doing on trucks, and I just wanted to bring everyone's attention to that item in the CBD, and should we duplicate it or should we not duplicate it for the next
year? Can we take that on notice? I think David's question was more about having local representatives of council so that he could complain to them about track movements as well. But let's have a look at
I'm
that
not
review.
I'm moving my house. But
which was intended for the central CBD, but let's have a look at where the status of the work and how we might be able to extend that. And just to reiterate, the new delivery operational model will really assist with some of the issues identified tonight. So we want to make sure that we're implementing that as quickly as possible. Councillor Lulu, did you have a comment, question?
Yeah, I think just for Tony, I think disappointing to hear that, you know, you always have to be saying that. I'd be very keen, you know, when we give out a budget and council plan, you know, we do invite a lot of the media to come in, but I think at the same time it'll be really good maybe from going forward that the community groups that are very vital and important are also be part of that embargo plan. I think it is a quite, apart from reading it a paper, I think, that is the main purpose, and I'm glad it actually delivered its job. But at the same time, I do acknowledge because of all the hard work of, South Bank residents and the many people who live in there who come in and actually, I think it's something that we really should put forward. So maybe hopefully for that next year's budget and for budget and council plan announcement, we do that not only for South Bank but also East Melbourne, Kensington and all the other ones, because we have developed neighbourhood plans. Hopefully we can do that. I just can't really help myself, but Roger also, it's not just the Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor, but I think all councillors will be holding you to account on that eventual one.
Good point. Yeah, that's very true. And I think proactive comms has been a consistent theme throughout all of the submissions. So I know Ashley's not here tonight, but I know she'll be getting a lot of this feedback, who's the new head of our comms team. So that brings us to the end of submissions this evening. We do have a motion, and just given some of the confusion earlier, the attachments to the councillor forum agenda that we saw this morning, what is being referred to in these attachments, both the submissions and the management feedback plus the table that had changes and the rationale for those changes. And I'm calling on a councillor to move this item. Councillor Lalu and a councillor to second the item. Councillor East, Councillor Lalu, did you want to add any comments
to
this?
Sorry, Lord Mayor, point of clarification, before we go into the debate again, can I ask that we look at the attachments and so that people present can also look at the attachments,
yep,
just page by page, relatively briefly before the debate begins. Thank you. Especially the latter pages.
And these will be made public. And to the extent that we've got email addresses for submitters, it's probably great if we push them out as well. So that would be appreciated. All right. Any comments
Just a very minor one, and I just wanted to acknowledge and thank everyone who's actually participated. It's great to see democracy in action, because it is the right of everyone who is part of Melbourne. I also note that the feedback, it's definitely something that we will take on notice, and also hopefully we've incorporated a majority of it. We've got a meeting straight after this to go into it, so I'll leave most of my comment in there, but I just wanted to thank particularly everyone who've come here. It's your feedback and input is something that I think we really do value, and I hope that keeps on. And I hope that really that you keep on engaging with us from this forward. We've got a 4-year term, we've got a 4-year plan, this is only the start of it. So I just encourage more people to be in participating and engaging with us.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Nothing to add substantively other than to thank very much upstanding citizens who have taken time out of their busy lives to submit to us both through the papers and today. The city is better for the contribution that you make, so thank you very much.
Good. Any other speakers to this motion? And the motion is that we are, having considered the feedback, particularly the written feedback and the suggestions from management, that we are endorsing the budget and the rate and revenue plan that we are. Oh, sorry, Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Leppett. No, that's all right. With respect to mover and seconder, this is the moment we're deciding the extent to which we're incorporating feedback from submissions. So I'll limit my comments to that, but perhaps in future years we'll reflect on the extent to which the notice of the management recommendations worked, because whilst I think having the meeting on the same day works well in theory, I can see the frustration from some of the submitters that the decisions that are being made and the extent to which feedback is and is not being incorporated isn't actually apparent. And so it mightn't be the most satisfying process, but we will continue to learn and evolve. I just want to say thank you to the large number of submitters and to everyone who's made a submission here today. On Poplar Avenue, we have seen the most elaborate and organised approach to a very real public safety issue, and it's also one that keeps me awake at night. I want to thank the zoo, the stakeholders from so many community and advocacy groups who work so hard and have identified a very, very real issue. We've heard that that we need approvals from the state before we can proceed to any works, that we also need to continue design works. The letter that community groups got a year ago saying that there would be a budget bid for implementing the works is something that I saw, so I had assumed that there were approvals and design works underway. So I've had to reassess where we were up to as well. And so we can go over that history, or we can just accept where we're up to now and decide what the fastest route towards making that part of the City of Melbourne safer will be. And I think it is to get those approvals as quickly as we can, get the design worked up as quickly as we can, and if there's a recommendation from management to proceed with works, subject to all the normal caveats that we put on these things, let's assess the cost, let's assess everything that goes on with that, there may be opportunities with quarterly reviews of capital works projects to put this in a variation to the budget in quarter one or quarter two. I don't know if that's the case, and I can't make that commitment. I do note, though, that we have always made budget variations on a quarterly basis to the capital works budget for every quarter that I've been here in 9 years, other than during the COVID period, but we're going to return to that from July. I want to thank management for making variations to the draft budget based on the fourth lockdown. So we're going to reintroduce outdoor dining fees, delaying that after 4 months. We're going to do 50% discount on some public event fees, and this is because we have to keep being reactive based on the state of the economy, state of where we're up to, and the capacity for small businesses to respond to what's happening in the economy. And I just want to say thank you to management for being so nimble and responsive to the needs of the local economy, but the people that underpin that economy, and that's what our economic management is all about. And finally, on neighbourhood statements, I can hear the criticism from David and from Tony and from others. We do need to constantly review the way we are communicating delivery of major works. As everyone has heard, we have reviewed the way internal delivery and project management occurs, but I do think we still have a fair way to go on public communication and consultation and improvement on as we roll out these projects. It's not just a matter of getting the one-way communication right, it is two-way. And so we do have to do delivery with the public differently. I just make the point that the neighbourhood statements that we've attached to the end of the budget is the first time we've ever done something like that, and that was an initiative of management responding to a very clear call from councillors to begin to do these things differently. That is going to keep evolving as well. And you can see neighbourhood by neighbourhood how we are tailoring our budget efforts and our strategic planning efforts, and that will continue to improve as well. So there is absolutely a commitment to continue to improve the way we communicate delivery of our major projects, and going forward that will be a big focus of mine, but I'm sure I'm not special there. We are all very much aware of the need of South Bank residents and residents across the municipality to meet that demand. And thank you.
Good. Thank you, Councillor Councillor Lippitt. We have come to the end, I think, of discussion for this motion. We are going to, if no other speakers, going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of this motion as it stands, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. I am pleased to say again and reiterate, as everybody else has, thank you so much to the effort that you've all gone to participate in this process. Thanks to our team for the work they've put in behind the scenes. We are now looking forward to our council meeting, which starts in, 18 minutes, so that we can formally adopt the plans that we've been talking about this evening, subject to any further debate. Thanks, everyone, and hopefully we'll get to see a few of you around in 18 minutes' time. Thank you. Closing the meeting at 5:14, just so that I've stated it out loud. Thank you.